This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. Ecuador's democracy is in deep trouble. Just days ago, Fernando Villavicencio, a member of the national legislature and a presidential candidate, was assassinated in broad daylight. The shocking incident has highlighted Ecuador's booming drug war, and it has also eclipsed a political battle over climate justice. Not only will voters have to pick a new president on August 20th, but also decide on a ballot measure that allows for a major fossil fuel reserve to be left unextracted. We turn now to Gabriela Barzalo, journalist and media entrepreneur based in New York City and Latin America. Her work focuses on human rights, the environment, and social justice with an emphasis on solutions. Her writing has appeared in media outlets in the US and Latin America, including Al Jazeera, Vice, etc. She's a fellow of the Solutions Journalism Network, and she just published a story in Yes Magazine recently entitled Biodiversity on the Ballot in Ecuador. Welcome to the program, Gabriela.
Thank you so much, Sonali, for having me here today.
So first, let's talk about the political turmoil itself in Ecuador. Although you wrote about this ballot measure around fossil fuel extraction in a remote indigenous occupied part of the Amazon, the issue of this assassination of this presidential candidate has consumed news headlines. And I'm wondering if you have any general thoughts about what that means for Ecuador's democracy in as much as it relates to the environmental movement in Ecuador.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for this question. Right now, Ecuador is going through a very complicated situation. We have seen unthinkable levels of violence, especially this year. There is 66% of violent deaths in 2023 so far. And I think that this has a connection with the upcoming referendum, because this upcoming Sunday, Ecuadorians will vote not only for president, but also for the environmental referendum. But right now, due to the insecurity, Ecuadorians are thinking twice about whether or not going to vote. So this can really affect the upcoming referendum as well.
So just in terms of turnout, you're worried that people may not show up in large enough numbers because of the fear in the nation?
Yes. Yeah, that's correct. There is a fear among Ecuadorians to show up and vote this Sunday.
And yet, just the mere act of getting on the ballot, this question of whether or not to tap into a fossil fuel reserve has been a huge victory. Let's get into that. That's a topic of your Yes Magazine article, where you discuss how the Yasuni National Park is the site of this battle. Tell me about the park itself. Tell me about the area of the Amazon rainforest and the role that it plays in fossil fuel reserves and extraction in Ecuador.
Yeah, so well, the Yasuni National Park is a UNESCO biosphere, and it's one of the most biodiverse places on Earth. It spans nearly 2,000 hectares, and it is also home to the Tagaeri and Taromenani people, who are one of the last indigenous peoples living in voluntary isolation. And I believe that right now, this referendum represents a historic opportunity for Ecuador to become the first country to decide on the future of oil extraction in the Amazon, to decide whether or not they Ecuadorian citizens want to keep oil underground. And also, I would say that this decision is historic for two reasons. First, because it's the first time that citizens of a country have the opportunity to engage in direct democracy, to vote on natural resources, and to express their support for nature, human rights, and the autonomy of indigenous peoples living in voluntary isolation. And I think that the Yasuni case could set a precedent that can be replicated in other countries as well, that can change the economic model, and especially for oil exploitation in the Amazon rainforest, and not only in the Ecuadorian Amazon, but also in the entire Amazonian region, which is composed of 9 countries in South America.
Well, let's talk about what Rafael Correa, the president of Ecuador at the time, had a few years ago, had actually attempted to do to keep the oil and in the ground. He had come up with kind of an ingenious idea. I mean, poorer nations or lower income nations in places like Latin America have felt that they've needed to rely on their fossil fuel resources in order to have economic prosperity, right? Venezuela is a good case in point. And they have to compete with Western nations like the US and Canada and Russia who made their wealth on fossil fuels. And so Rafael Correa, who is self-styled liberal, instead of initially wanting to extract fossil fuels, asked the world to pay Ecuador to keep the oil in the ground. So tell me that story and what happened to it.
Yeah. So, well, to really understand like the significance of this referendum on a global scale, we must reflect back to 10 years ago in 2007, then President Correa introduced an initiative to keep more than 800 million barrels of oil underground within the Yasuni ITT field in an effort to protect the area's biodiversity and indigenous people while also preventing carbon emissions. And in exchange, he was looking for a contribution of $3.6 billion from the international community. But a couple of years later, in 2013, the initiative only raised $13 million towards that goal. So therefore, Correa canceled the initiative and abandoned the plan. And he asked to the National Congress for permission to start exploiting the ITT field. And since then, the Yasuni ITT field has been exploited, generating over 50,000 barrels per day.
So he was asking for the world to pay Ecuador to keep the oil in the ground, which is actually a good idea, but it didn't work. Out of $3 billion, only $13 million was pledged. So what has the impact of the oil? So then he, of course, pivoted to the oil extraction. What did that generate, not just in terms of carbon emissions, but how did that impact the Yasuni people, the indigenous people who live there? And tell me the story of the youth-led activism that has then developed that you profile in your story, the Yasunidos.
Yeah. So in response to Correa's decision, a group of youth and a group of environmental activists, feminists, indigenous peoples from all over Ecuador decide to organize and create the Yasunidos collective. They were pushing for a referendum so that Ecuadorians could decide oil extraction in the Amazon rainforest. And well, I mentioned that this referendum hold historical significance, and I said that because I think that it also exemplifies the power of grassroots and youth activism, because this referendum has become possible due to the unstoppable efforts of the Yasunidos collective. It was formed 10 years ago, and they came together, and since 2013, they have been advocating not only for the Yasuni National Park, but also for all other environmental issues in the country. They have been criticizing all the negative effects that the oil industry has provoked in Ecuador, which are oil spills, massive contamination, and degradation. And unfortunately, Ecuador has a very complex history with the oil industry involving ecocide, impunity, contamination. We have witnessed crimes, destruction, and poverty. And as a journalist, I've heard countless stories of abuses in communities. And the oil industry has only served to divide this community. So Yasu Nidos emerged as a response to not only to the oil exploitation in the Yasuni, but in the whole Ecuadorian Amazon.
And I understand that it was really initiated by young people. You said it's been around for about 10 years. Tell me who the Yasu Nidos are. Are they not just diverse in age, but also diverse in race? Are they indigenous and non-indigenous Ecuadorians?
Yeah, most of the Yasu Nidos are actually not indigenous. They live in urban areas. They live in Quito, Cuenca, which are the main cities of Ecuador. And it's funny, I mean, it is interesting because sometimes, like, I was born and raised in Ecuador, but the first time that I went to the Amazon rainforest was about 5 years ago. So Ecuadorians, we don't have a direct connection with the Amazon rainforest. And that's why the work that Yasu Nidos has been doing for over a decade is important, because this is not only a matter of indigenous people. The Amazon rainforest belongs to all Ecuadorians, and they organized to share that, to raise awareness about our Amazon region, our natural resources, and to stand up for human rights, indigenous rights, and yeah.
So they're united with the Yasu Ni people, hence Yasu Nidos.
Yes, because it's Yasu Nidos from Yasu Ni and Unidos, which means united.
Mm. So these are non-indigenous Ecuadorians who are doing solidarity work. How has even the Korea government targeted them and prevented them from being able to carry out their work, which I imagine is a measure of how successful they've been?
Yes. So when Yasu Nidos started to organize back in 2013, they faced several challenges, including persecution, surveillance by the Korea government, when they were asked to get the signatures for the referendum. They denounced several persecution, but different, like the government and also the oil industry people. So yeah, they are a really great example of strength, of really the power of activism, and they never gave up.
So their achievement has been to get this, or their many years long achievement has been to get this ballot measure now before voters, which, as I mentioned, on August 20th, alongside picking a new president, Ecuadorians will get to vote on whether to keep the fossil fuels in the Yasu Ni National Park in the ground or to develop it. Tell me about the ballot measure itself. It's a pretty simple question, right?
Yeah, so Ecuadorians, as I told you before, the ITT block or the ITT field of the Yasu Ni National Park has been exploited since 2016, after Korea asked for permission in 2013, and the oil exploitation has been taking place since 2016. So now the question is about whether Ecuadorians want oil exploitation to continue or to stop in the Yasu Ni part. So if they vote yes, exploitation will stop. But if they vote no, exploitation will continue.
What sort of support has there been in the country? Because it's one thing to get a ballot measure on such an issue. It's another thing to actually convince people, do the voter education necessary to ensure that people vote the way you think they should vote. So what sort of activism or canvassing or other legwork has been done on a grassroots level by Yasu Nidos to ensure that this ballot measure passes?
Yeah, so I'm seeing a lot of digital activism. As I mentioned, right now the situation in Ecuador is very complex.
Right.
So I think that all the work and the campaign has been taking place online, and it's very interesting because I've like unfortunately Ecuador is a very polarized country. But I think that this fight has united people, and I've seen people from all kind of ideologies get together to defend Yasuni, which is I think which I think is the most inspiring thing that we have seen recently.
Is this ballot measure an example of the kinds of things that can happen on a broader level, both in Ecuador around fossil fuel extraction, but also in Latin America as a whole? Getting the question of fossil fuel extraction to the people at a time when people are directly feeling the impacts of climate disaster.
Yes, absolutely. I think that right now, currently, in the Amazon region in Latin America, the conversation is shifting towards contemplating a post-extractive era because there are some research studies that say that
Post-extractive?
post-extractive,
I
yes,
see. Yeah.
because there some studies say that the oil reserves in Ecuador could end by 2030. So it's time to consider new economic alternatives that are not only reliant on oil exploitation. And many indigenous and local communities are already working towards generating such alternatives. They are creating projects like ecotourism projects, or they are cultivating native plants, which are being exported worldwide, and they are generating crucial resources. And I think that regardless of the results, like this is a very important event for us to start thinking about a post-extractive economy. And yeah, and it's important also to see how local communities are discovering new ways to survive and progress without being dependent on extractive practices. And also, I recently talked like a couple of days ago with an Ecuadorian analyst, and he told me that like amid this global calls to address the climate crisis and to curb fossil fuels, like regardless of the outcome, for him, I think that the Yasu Unidos fight is like a symbol of civic participation and democracy, and also that all this referendum is just like a testament of activism and how we can empower citizens to make decisions about our resources. And also this can inspire other social movements, not also in Ecuador or in Latin America, but also at a global scale.
I mean, it's also really remarkable how presidents and how administrations that have claimed to be progressive have gone on the offensive when it comes to fossil fuel extraction, and it has ended up with fueling corruption in nations like Ecuador. You write in depth in your Yes Magazine article about how the government has been exposed, its surveillance of the Yasu Unidos has been exposed, and how the government has attempted to discredit the signatures that the organization collected to get the ballot measure to voters. So there's a huge fight just in terms of allowing democracy to unfold, right? Because it's a democracy. If you live in a democratic nation, it should be okay to ask the people whether they want fossil fuels to be burned or not.
Yes, that's correct.
Tell me about some of the people involved that you interviewed for your article, who are involved in Yasu Unidos, some very young people who are involved. What inspires them? Tell me about the people who are making up this movement.
Well, this movement is very big right now, but some of its founding members continue to fight. They created the Yasu Unidos when they were teenagers. They were about 16, 17 years old, and they're now 26, 27. And so one of them is Pedro Bermeo, who's the spokesperson. And I think that he has become a very like important figure in Ecuador, not only in social movement sphere, but also in politics. And I think another member is Antonella, and she's also a founding member. And since I've talked to them, and they have told me that what inspired them to join Yas Unidos was just that in Ecuador, we sometimes, as I mentioned before, like sometimes we don't even know what we have. So for them, the main inspiration was to embrace our nature, embrace our natural resources, and to share that with people who don't necessarily live in the Amazon region. And also because right now we are, you know, facing a global climate crisis. And 10 years ago, it was already part of the conversation, but not as much as now. And they were also worried about that, and understanding that the Amazon region, the Amazon rainforest, is the lungs of the planet. They just were very conscious about that, and they were just trying to find ways to let Ecuadorians know about the importance of our Amazon.
I want to thank you so much for joining us today, Gabriela. We'll post a link to your story in Yes Magazine from our website, risingupwithsonali.com. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sonali, for your
My
time.
Guest has been Gabriela Barzalo, journalist and media entrepreneur based in between New York City and Latin America. She's a fellow also of the Solutions Journalism Network, and her latest story published in Yes Magazine is entitled Biodiversity on the Ballot in Ecuador. Elections will take place there on August 20th. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. You can access this and other interviews on our website, risingupwithsonali.com, by becoming a subscriber. Find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify, and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.